Okay. The mitzvah of Kiseh Hadam is an appropriate topic for us to really end off on, because we started this year, many months ago, talking about concepts of Shechita. That's how the Masechta begins. And the mitzvah of Kiseh Hadam is very much connected and perhaps is the completion of the act of Shechita. So let's try to get a little bit of a sense of that. The Pasuk in Parshas Achrimos tells us, V'ish ish mibnei Yisrael, this is Parak Yud Zayin, Pasuk Yud Gimel in Achrimos, V'ish ish mibnei Yisrael, min hager hagar besocham, asher yatsud, Seid chaya o'of, So here we are told there is this mitzvah when one is shechting an animal to spill out the blood and to cover it up with the dirt. Ki nefesh kol basar damo benafshahu. V'omar levnei Yisrael dam kol basar lo sochelu. Ki nefesh kol basar damo hi kol ochlav yikareis. Okay, so looking at those psukim, those two psukim together, how would you assess the mitzvah of Kiseh Hadam? What would you say its goal and its purpose is? What would you understand as the function of Kiseh Hadam as a mitzvah? Any thoughts? Yes, Levi?
I thought maybe it could be sort of similar to Kfura, because if blood is sort of like the nefesh of an animal, then, or the life force of an animal, like when you bury it, maybe.
Okay, so let's try to flesh that out a little bit. So, what would when you say it's similar to kvura? So, on some level, it's clearly similar to kvura because they both involve putting something that was alive or a part of life into the ground or to be covered up. So there clearly is some kind of overlap to Kvura, but does it go beyond that? Or is it the external similarity? How would you connect it conceptually to Kvura?
Maybe like there's some sort of like a kavod aspect to Kvura.
Okay, so
basic human dignity, or some basic animal dignity, yeah.
Okay, so in the context of Kvura, that's for sure true, right? That there is this concept that it relates to bizayon, that it's disgraceful for a human being to be, like the Torah says, in the context of somebody who's hanged, to have somebody suspended there and not taken care of as a bizayon. And Kvura certainly contributes to their dignity and to their honor. So is that the aspect here? That because we don't have the ability to actually, or the need even, to bury an animal in that sense, but the blood represents something of a token of that? Is that the idea? Perhaps, but it's also seemingly significant that the Torah does seem to immediately follow up this mitzvah. We read the two psukim in a row with what prohibition? And what's the emphasis in the next pasuk? That there is a prohibition of eating the dam. So is Kiseh Hadam some kind of a protective, either actually or symbolically, against eating blood? Could be. Right, that's an idea that Sefer Achinuch and others emphasize. That maybe what we're seeing here is something which connects itself to the Isser of Achilas Dam. But on the other hand, and it's not necessarily completely unrelated, What also seems to be emerging here is a relationship to the mitzvah of Shechita itself. And the suggestion that Shechita requires Kisa Hadam as a natural next step. Right, where do you get that hint from the Pasuk? From the presentation of the Torah, where do you get that sense? Right, what's the language of the Pasuk? So, the implication one might get from reading the Pasuk straight is, if you're going to hunt an animal and you want to eat it, so what should you do? You should spill its blood out and you should cover it up in blood. Cover up the blood, rather. Sorry, not cover it up. Cover up the blood. So one could get the suggestion that this is a part of the heter achila, that the license that we have to eat that comes from Shechita is tied in integrally to the idea of how the blood is treated. That the blood is drained from the animal and covered up as well. So here you have this mitzvah of Kisei Hadam, which is couched in the context of the Torah in the Isser of eating blood. So one could understand it as being related to that. But it's also a part of the process of Shechita. And maybe it's related to that. Or maybe they're all interconnected. So when we started the first day of learning about Hilcha Shechita, so we saw that integrated into the theory of Shechita is the idea of avoiding eating blood. That the nefesh of the behemah is represented by the blood, and therefore we have to remove that completely in order to have a license to eat the animal. And that indicates also maybe the process of Shechita, that the idea that the animal is cut in that exact place, in the neck. So on the one hand, it seems to be connected to the most painless death possible. But it also, as the Rishonim emphasized, the Sefer HaChinuch especially, that that's where the blood is going to be drained most effectively. And a part of the process of making the animal mutter to eat is removing the blood to the greatest extent. So it's all apparently interconnected. Right? The idea of not eating the blood and the idea of Shechita in its most complete sense and the idea of Kisui Hadam all perhaps seem to be interconnected. So let me ask you this question, just to start off. If we are to argue that Kisui Hadam is connected to the process of Shechita, and that it is somehow intertwined with the mitzvah of Shechita, so how would that impact the halacha? What possible scenarios or issues could you think of that may emerge from that relationship of Kisui Hadam being connected to the Shechita process? Can you think of any practical ramifications? What would you say? How might this affect the question of how to view the mitzvah? Well, would it affect, would the accomplishment of this mitzvah impact on whether the meat is mutter or not? And what if you don't do Kisui Hadam? Is the meat still mutter? So that's something we have to consider. And who is the one who has the obligation of Kiseh Hadam? Right? Is that something that is associated with one individual specifically? And if so, who? And what emerges from that question? So let's try to start off with some of those considerations and see how they contribute to the picture. So the relationship of Shechita and Kiseh Hadam, one issue that brings it up is the question of the bracha. So if we have a bracha that's recited on Kiseh Hadam, so when is this bracha recited? And this was a dispute among the Rishonim. You get a chance to see that, the Rush and others, in the beginning of the Parak Kiseh Hadam, of the sixth Parak. The Rush quotes the Bahag, that the Bahag maintained that the bracha shouldn't be recited until afterwards, which is unusual. Right? We normally maintain that brachos have to be over lasiyasan. We talk about brachos hamitzvos, that the bracha has to come before the mitzvah, with a small list of exceptions because of circumstance. So here the Bahag maintains that if you're going to make a bracha before Kiseh Hadam, you're still in the middle of the mitzvah, you're still in the middle of the process of the shechita. And therefore, the bracha shouldn't be until afterwards. So that is not the view that's accepted the halacha. We assume the bracha should be recited before the Kiseh Hadam. But it's interesting as to what it suggests about how you essentially seem to have one mitzvah here, and that it's all a part of one process, that the Shechita and the Kiseh Hadam are all a continuum, and therefore it's not going to fit to make the bracha in the middle. And even if that's not what we accept lahalacha, but that's an interesting perspective on what it says about the flow between them. And it seems to suggest that whatever the Shechita is trying to accomplish, that that's not accomplished until the whole process is over, including the blood being covered up. So that essentially, what is Shechita doing? Shechita is draining the animal of blood as absolutely as possible. And that isn't complete until Kiseh Hadam takes place. Now, is that because somehow that connects to preventing suffering in the animal? Or is that because it is the statement maybe along the lines of what Levi was talking about as far as dignity, that that's where the sensitivity to the life of the animal is most completely represented? Or is it because that what keeps us farthest away from eating dam, which is all perhaps connected into those themes? It's a fair question, but maybe they're all connected. Maybe they're all related together. So it's interesting also, I mentioned yesterday the Sefer Beis Matas Yo, when talking about Shiluach HaKan, he has a nice piece on Kiseh Hadam as well, a few essays about that, where he develops this theme also of the notion of this being the completion of the act of Shechita. And what's striking is to compare Chulin to Kadshim. Right, in the context of Kadshim, so there we find that we don't have a mitzvah of Kiseh Hadam when karbanos are involved. But there we do have a mitzvah involving the blood. Right? There the blood is part of the process, the zrikas hadam. So it could be that there's a parallel there. That one way or another, what happens with the dam comes to emphasize what we're doing. And it comes to emphasize the purpose of the shechita. So in the case of kadshim, so the animal is shechted for the service of the avoda, and therefore when the blood is incorporated into that process, so that tells us what the whole goal of the shechita was. In the case of chulin, when you're eating the animal, that's the purpose of the shechita. So then it is the covering up of the blood. It is what keeps the blood as far as possible from the one eating it that completes the process of what's happening, and that in its own way shows us what the shechita is meant to accomplish. So if the shechita is there for avodas hakarbanos, the zrikas hadam gives us a insight into that, and if the shechita is for the purpose of eating, so then the kisui hadam gives us a insight into that purpose. So far, so good. Makes sense? Everybody with me? So, what about the question of, let's say, how does this affect the heter achila? So, what's the din in Shulchan Aruch? What's the din in the Ramah? So, if you had a chance to see that, so what you find is that the Ramah, in the beginning of Hilchas Kisei Adam, which is Simen Chaf Ches, very appropriately, it's the last Simen in Hilchas Shechita, again, so that symbolism is adhered to in the structure of the Torah and the Shulchan Aruch. So there we find that the Ramah quotes from the Beis Yosef that if one does not cover up the blood, so the meat is still mutter. So that's a drop surprising. I can read you the language of the Ramah. I think I have it here. And at the first siman in Hilchos Kisui Hadam here, Chav Ches Aleph, Hashocher Chaya Of Tzarech Lechasos Damo Bein Sidon Ata Bein Shayim Izum Biyado. That's from the Mechaber, and the Ramah adds, V'hakisui hu mitzvah b'fnei atzma, kach mashma ba'asheri per kisui hadam, aval hashchita k'sheira afim hizid v'lo chisa. Quotes from the Beis Yosef. So here, it's a little bit surprising, in light of what we're seeing, that despite the fact that we just emphasized how crucial the kisui hadam is to the process of shechita and to the concept of shechita, so maybe it's a little bit surprising to have this conclusion that nonetheless the kisui is still seen as enough of a separate mitzvah to the extent that if one doesn't do it, even intentionally if one doesn't do it, still the shechita is still kosher. Is that surprising? Seemed like it. So how do you explain that? And how do you explain why it doesn't impact the permissibility of the meat? So there, it sounds like, despite the fact that it's not what you'd expect, the idea seems to be still that it plays itself out as a hider in the mitzvah of shechita, that the shechita is still the shechita, and kisei hadam is an additional emphasis of the themes of Shechita. So it impacts our relationship to what's happening, but it's not the mitzvah of Shechita itself. So a failure, and even an intentional failure, to perform this mitzvah doesn't negate the act of Shechita as much as it's still crucial for our mentality and our attitude towards the Shechita. And how do we find that we see it's crucial? And how do we see that it plays a role that is still vitally important? Because as much as the meat is permissible afterwards, without it, But we're not allowed to shech the animal to begin with if we don't have the ability to cover the blood. So if we don't have dirt that's available or any other substance that's available to cover up the blood, so then that's going to impact the permissibility of shechting in the first place. And that impacts Hilchos Yontif, for example, because we find that even though you can shecht an animal on Yontif, you can't shecht on Shabbos, but you can shecht on Yontif, but what if you don't have anything available in order to cover up the blood? And the only way to prepare any covering substance is through something that is problematic on Yontif. So then that's going to affect your ability to shecht. So that does say something about how important it is. So in terms of finding the point on the spectrum of just how important it is, it's not crucial enough, it's not built into the mitzvah of Shechita to the extent that failing to do so negates the mitzvah of Shechita, but it is crucial enough for the process that if you know you're not going to be able to do it, that impacts your ability to shecht in the first place. Following so far? Makes sense? So here, there's a question you could discuss. And the Beis Matisyahu talks about this also, that it's interesting to try to draw a parallel between this and other mitzvos. That we know, for example, we have a mitzvah of tzitzis, that there is a obligation to attach tzitzis to a four-cornered garment. And because of that mitzvah, if you don't do that, if you don't put on the tzitzis, so then you're not allowed to wear the four-cornered garment without it. Right? That's considered to be a bittul mitzvah saseh. However, the Mordechai, it's quoted in Beis Yosef and others, the Mordechai was of the opinion, this seems to impact practical halacha, that let's say it's Shabbos, and it's impossible for you to attach tzitzis to your garment. So then the Mordechai maintained, there's nothing wrong with wearing the garment on Shabbos without tzitzis, because the whole issue in the first place is the failure to fulfill the mitzvah of tzitzis. But if it's impossible for you to do it, because Hilchos Shabbos interferes, so then there's no liability here, there's no responsibility for not attaching the tzitzis, and you're able to wear the garment without the tzitzis. Because the failure to put the tzitzis doesn't say anything about you, because the Shabbos is interfering, so you're an onus, there's nothing you can do about it. And it's an interesting discussion as to where do we go from there as far as other mitzvahs are concerned. So, for example, one area where that Mordechai is invoked, and it plays a major role in practical halacha nowadays, it doesn't come up that often. But it could come up, doesn't come up that often. But one area where it comes up a lot in practical halacha today is, what about tefillas kelim? We have a mitzvah, maybe daraisa, maybe derabanan, to immerse new utensils in the mikvah. And we assume that we can't use those utensils until after they've gone to the mikvah. The nature of that Isser is subject to a lot of discussions, not our topic right now. Is that an Isser Daraisa, an Isser Drabanan? Is it an actual Isser? Is it somewhere in between? It's not our discussion right now, but for practicality purposes, we know we generally don't use Kalim that have not yet been taken to the mikveh. So what if it's impossible to go to the mikveh? Right, this has been a major practical issue for us over these past few months, especially because this whole crisis started before Pesach, when many people were getting involved with new utensils, and we had this question of under what circumstances can you use the new utensils if it's not feasible to take them to the mikveh. So there's a lot of referencing of this Mordechai, that if you can't attach tzitzis on Shabbos, you can wear the garment on Shabbos without tzitzis. So should we say also, if you can't take the kelim to the mikveh, if it's not your fault, but the circumstances are, it's impossible, whether because of Shabbos or because of something else, so should we say, okay, so then the mitzvah is not shaykh to do, and therefore it's not going to impact on the permissibility. So Tfilas Kalim is its whole own discussion. But here, why don't we say, okay, if a person just doesn't have access to anything that he can cover the blood with, so he's an onus, it's impossible, and therefore we should say, okay, go ahead with the Shechita. Now you hear the question? So everything seems to be about, it's a matter of degrees. All these things seem to be connected to each other, but still, apparently, there are nuanced differences, and we have to figure out exactly where something lies on the continuum. So apparently, and this is also discussed in that Sefer Beis Matas Yo, that perhaps when it comes to tzitzis, so tzitzis doesn't necessarily reflect anything that's actually bad. The lack of tzitzis in a garment is not something that's actually a problem. It's a positive mitzvah to put the tzitzis on. It's not like the garment is somehow treif until the tzitzis is put on. So therefore, if the mitzvah is simply impossible, okay, so then we're not going to holds you responsible for a positive mitzvah that's impossible for you to do. But when it comes to Kiseh Hadam, it seems like it's more than that. That there's something that is lacking in the process of the Shechita if the Kiseh Hadam is not possible. And therefore, it's not right to progress with the Shechita when you know that Kiseh Hadam can't happen. And it's something more than putting on a garment that doesn't have tzitzis. Ari?
Perhaps maybe on the other side of the relationship, like arguing that there isn't such a strong correlation between shchita and kisle hadam. Mm-hmm. The pasuk says that kisle hadam applies to a chaya and to an oaf, but presumably to the exception of a behema.
Right.
And of course, a behema is chayav and shchita, so it can't be that everything that's chayav and shchita must subsequently be followed by its, you know, commensurate Kiseh Adam process.
So that's a fascinating question. Why is it that there's not 100% parallel between where you have Shechita and where you have Kiseh Adam? And we find a few other differences, such as the whole Hektish issue, but the Behema Chaya, I realized before, I think I used the word Behema when I was talking about Shechita, and you're right that they have to distinguish more carefully because of the Chaya versus Behema distinction. But the Gemara seems to suggest that there's a difference in the nature of the blood. That as far as how the blood in its substantive character, that's something we'll probably have to come back to a little bit tomorrow. But it is a fascinating exclusion because you have to figure out exactly what that means. You're right, it does seem to call into question, why don't we have a direct parallel between the animals that need Shechita and the animals that need Kiseh Hadam? And where exactly do you find the differences, and how do you explain those differences? So that's something that we'll have to say a little bit more of. We'll probably get to that a little bit tomorrow. I'll give you a few extra sources to see about that. But it seems to be that there is a independent explanation for that, that within the nature of the blood of the Behema versus the Chaya, there is something that differentiates between the two, because it definitely requires explanation. It's definitely a surprising din. So that also forces us to sharpen our definitions a little bit. But nonetheless, it does seem to, through other indications, be associated with the shechita itself. But maybe you're right that that's also something to consider. What does that say about the dam eating issues that are connected to this process, and how does that play out? So we'll expand on that a little bit more as we go on. But it certainly seems that when the mitzvah of kiseh hadam is shayach, the animals in which it's applicable, that to do shechita without the possibility of that mitzvah is something which impacts the shechita in a more powerful way than putting on a garment without tzitzis. So, putting together all the parts, we have a continuum where it's somewhere in the middle, right? On the one hand, it's not as integrated into the shechita process that if you fail to do this, the meat isn't mutter. The meat is mutter. So the shechita is, at the end of the day, effective even without the kiseh hadam. But it's not separate enough that if kiseh hadam is impossible, we're going to allow shechita. On that issue, it's differentiated in the other direction. And maybe tzitzis we can live without if it's impossible. But kiseh hadam, we're not going to allow you to progress if it's impossible. Now, just parenthetically, there's a lot to analyze about that whole comparison about tzitzis and what it says about the garment without tzitzis. So, for example, Rav Yosef Engel, who we've mentioned a few times in different contexts, so he has a essay in one of his forum where he says that even though when it comes to mitzvah saseh shahazman grama, that women are normally exempt from mitzvahs that are time-bound, still we say they're exempt, but if they want to fulfill the mitzvah, so then it's still valuable. And the Ashkenazi Rishonim maintain that women can make a bracha even on mitzvahs that they are exempt from because of the notion of mitzvah saseh shahazman grama. Nonetheless, this seems to be a practice that the Ramah records that tzitzis we don't recommend for women, even though it seems to be similar to other mitzvot saseh shahazman grama. So Rav Yosef Engel has an essay about this where he suggests, seems to go in a different direction, that tzitzis, because we're saying only men are chayiv in tzitzis when they're wearing a four-cornered garment, it seems to imply that it's not a inherent value, but there's something lacking for a man to wear a four-cornered garment without tzitzis. And the exemption of women means that they are not lacking anything in that case. And therefore, for them to put on tzitzis wouldn't be valuable because it's fixing something that's not broken. To blow shofar, to take a lulav, okay, that's a positive act. So even if you're exempt, it makes sense to volunteer to do it. But to volunteer to wear tzitzis, says Rav Yosef Engel, he thinks it doesn't make sense. Now, does that reflect the broad understanding of the halacha? Is a good question, because there he applies this also to sukkah. He says that sukkah, so men to eat outside of sukkah on sukkahs, there's something missing. Women who are exempt, they're not missing anything, so therefore they're not fixing anything by volunteering to do it. That seems to be against the widespread practice, because women generally assume there is a value to eating in the sukkah, even if they're exempt. So there's a lot of nuance to figure out as far as how these comparisons go. So one can go back and forth about these issues, and certainly the tefilas kelim we mentioned before, there's a lot of machlokas just how much this fits in to this whole model. But basically, coming from this structure, this Mordechai in tzitzis is very influential, so it gives a framework to consider some of these questions. So, setting aside the nuances of tzitzis and sukkah and their tefilas kelim and the debates that one could have, but it gives us somewhat of a framework that on the one hand you could say that kiseh hadam is not so crucial to shechita because the shechita is still kosher after the fact. But on the other hand, it's more crucial than putting on tzitzis on a four-cornered garment, because if it's impossible, we wouldn't allow you to shecht in the first place. And that's not necessarily the same model that we find in other cases. Okay, so far so good? Makes sense? Okay, so who is it who has the chiyuv of Kisei Hadam? Who is the mitzvah on? Who has the rebuild? Who has the responsibility? Do you see any of the Gemara about this? See in Shulchan Aruch, who has the responsibility of Kisei Hadam? Yeah, all right.
The Gemara says the person who does the shechita should cover the blood.
Okay, so that's interesting, right? So it's specifically on the shochet. Who else could you have thought would have been a candidate? Yeah, all right.
I mean, if you go from the perspective that it's about preventing people from eating blood, then everyone's chayav and or is adjoins not to eat blood, so it should be on everyone's obligation to cover the blood.
Okay, so you could think that it was essentially a neutral point, that there's a mitzvah to keep the blood out of you, and therefore anybody who sees this blood has the mitzvah. That's a possibility. And the truth is, we do find that on some level that's true. Right? Because if the shochet himself doesn't do it, so then indeed there is a chiyuv on others. That's what the Gemara concludes. But there's still a difference, because apparently there's a primary responsibility on the shochet. And the idea that somebody else should do it, that's only if the shochet is neglecting his responsibility. But all things being equal, all things are not equal. Right? If he's doing it, then he has a different responsibility, and it's considered to be his schus. So therefore, you can't take it away from him. And who might have been a candidate to also have the schus? What if you have the owner of the animal? Right? Let's say one person owns the animal, and he gives somebody else the job of shechting it. So you might have thought that it's on the owner. It's his animal, his responsibility, his blood. And the shochet is a hired hand. So it would have been reasonable to think it is the owner's responsibility. So that's interesting, the fact that it's the shochet's responsibility, which maybe also fits into the idea that it's part of the mitzvah of Shechita. And, in fact, the Darchei Tshuva was the Minchat Rebbe. It's a very broad commentary on the Yoredeya, where he quotes a lot of Achronim. And there he quotes Reb Shlomo Kluger. Reb Shlomo Kluger was a great Achron, always had a creative and unusual way of approaching things. So the Darchei Tshuva quotes, pronouncing it like that because the Mincatcher accent. So the Darchei Tshuva quotes the Shlomo Kluger, that even if the owner of the animal would make a deal and say, okay, I'm asking you to shecht, but I'm holding back the tchus of Kisei Adam for myself, the deal doesn't work. Because, he says, Masna Mashakasa B'Torah, he's trying to make a condition against the rule of the Torah. Which is an interesting idea. He's saying that this is really, by definition, the responsibility of the Shochet. So that itself has a number of implications. So on the one hand, the part of what's interesting about Kisei Hadam, and we'll see maybe tomorrow get as much of this in as possible, that there are a number of ways in which Kisei Hadam, which is a mitzvah that you and I probably don't get involved in too much, doesn't play a role in our daily lives, maybe in your yearly life if you're involved in kaparos with actual chickens, which is also something that all of us are involved in, but if not that, then you probably never really partake in Kisei Hadam. So Kisei Hadam is not a mitzvah that's necessarily a part of our daily lives, but it's still a mitzvah that has a lot of general relevance, because we learn a certain halachos about how mitzvahs operate from Kisei Hadam. So it's a part of, really, it's probably true about everything we've talked about in these past few weeks about Kid Hanasha and Shiluach HaKan and Kisei Dam. All of these are mitzvos that you and I don't necessarily perform on a daily or a monthly or maybe even yearly basis. But nonetheless, there are yesodos in each of these cases, in each of these mitzvos, that impact broader halacha, both hashkafically and practically, as we're seeing. So one of the dinim that's relevant broadly that you find in Hilchos Kisei Hadam is the whole idea of a mitzvah being connected to a personal individual as a right. And that if I take away, if somebody else does the mitzvah, so there's an issue there, both as far as the rights of the actual mechuyev, and as far as the responsibilities of the actual mechuyev. That it's wrong on two levels, in other words, that for somebody else to do this, you are impacting, you're hurting the person who's supposed to do it, and the person who's supposed to do it is doing something wrong by not doing it himself. So where do you find the idea here in our sugya, where do you find the idea that you're impacting his rights, so to speak? So if you saw, the Gemara tells us that there's a concept of a penalty, a financial penalty, which is a fascinating question itself. This comes up once in a while, how exactly to assess this. But there's a notion of asara zehuvim, like 10 gold coins that you have to pay to somebody if you steal their mitzvah. That mitzvos are priceless, are of infinite value, but nonetheless, we got to put a price on it. So there's a knas, theoretically, for somebody who steals somebody else's mitzvah. And this comes up from time to time. So theoretically, what might be a parallel, a mitzvah that's a little bit more frequently performed nowadays, what might be a parallel to the mitzvah of Kisui Hadam? Where else do you find a mitzvah that may be primarily on one individual, but if that individual doesn't do it, it's okay, society has the obligation. But it's primarily on one individual. Sam, you're raising your hand, Shmuel?
Bris,
right? So a bris milah seems to parallel this. That here, the obligation of a bris milah is primarily on the father. But if the father's not going to do it, so then Beis Din does it, or society does it. Or eventually, if enough years pass, then the boy himself takes on the obligation. So there does seem to be a parallel there. There's a mitzvah that is specifically addressed to one person, but it's possible to be done by society as a whole, if not this person. But it is addressed towards one individual, and like we said a minute ago, again, in both directions. So if one were to, let's say somebody has a baby, and on the eighth day, father's preparing for the bris, and somebody else happens to very creepily walk past his house in the middle of the day there and say, oh, wait, here's an eight-day-old baby. Looks like he needs a bris. I think I'll do it. So he would have to pay a sar zehuvim after he finishes his lengthy jail sentence for extremely strange behavior. So this idea that there's some impact, there's some debt to the actual mechuyev would play out in that context. Now, there's a fascinating tshuva of the Chsam Sofer. The Chsam Sofer has a discussion, it's more relevant to a very different area of halacha, but it's interesting how it draws on this, that we know there's a prohibition of onos devarim, very relevant as we approach the 3 weeks. Not allowed to cause somebody emotional pain. And included in that prohibition of emotional pain is cruel practical jokes. If you play a joke on somebody at their expense, you're laughing and they're not. So that's asur min haTorah, that's a violation of onos devar. So what happens to somebody who does this? It's a good question. And there is a tshuva about it in the Chsam Sofer, where he has a discussion. There was somebody who was prominent in the community. He was either a shochet, maybe, or the chazan. And he had a stature, and he played a practical joke on somebody. There was another person in the community who was known to be very fond of doing the mitzvah of milah. So this individual told that guy, he said, guess what, I had a baby boy, and the bris is next Wednesday at my country estate, and it's a 3-hour horse ride from here, but you should come, and you can perform the bris. So on that date, the guy schleps out there for 3 hours, and turns out, guess what? He really had a girl. There's no baby boy there. So, haha, isn't it funny? You came to do this bris, and there isn't really a bris. So, what should happen to this guy who plays jokes like this? What, should he be fired? Should he be penalized? What should you do to such a person? So, that was a discussion. And Chassam Sofer, in the end, he concludes he shouldn't get fired, but he should be punished in certain ways. And one of the ways is, he says, he should pay this guy Asar Zehuvim. So it's interesting, because that's the penalty for stealing a mitzvah. Here, this guy didn't steal a mitzvah. The mitzvah never actually existed. It wasn't actually any yichiv in the first place. More like Bernie Madoff. He didn't actually, the money wasn't there in the first place. The mitzvah wasn't there in the first place. So the idea seems to be that on some level, for punitive purposes, we say that there is a knas that correlates to whatever we can do to evaluate a mitzvah. So if this guy, he thought that he was schlepping out there because he thought he would get a mitzvah, he thought he has a schus mitzvah, so if we can't give him the mitzvah, we should give him at least a asar zehuvim to compensate him for why he thought he was doing this in the first place. Which is interesting. So the idea of asar zehuvim and what it represents comes up in halach every once in a while, even though technically it plays out as a knas. It plays out as a penalty, and our batei din nowadays don't actually collect penalties, but has at least a theoretical value. And it tells us something about the nature of mitzvos. So just to give one more example, like the Minchas Chinuch discusses that we know before Pesach we have to get rid of our chametz. So the Minchas Chinuch has a whole discussion. Is that because we just don't want to have chametz because there's an iser to eat it, so therefore we have to make sure we don't have any chametz to prevent us from violating the iser of eating chametz? Or is there some positive value to destroying chametz before Pesach? This is a little bit of a introduction into next year's Masechta, right? So the very beginning of Pesachim, so it's going to start with this discussion. Is there a positive value to getting rid of chametz? This is a little bit of a preview, a little bit to segue from one to the other. It's actually a very effective bridge between the two Masechtas to end with Kisui Hadam and to begin with destroying chametz. So there the Menches Chinuch discusses, so let's say I have some chametz on Erev Pesach, I plan on destroying it, and the same creepy guy who goes around circumcising 8-day-old babies, so he shows up in people's houses on Erev Pesach with a flamethrower, and he torches any chametz that he sees before the owner gets a chance to. So this guy is really piling on to his jail system, his jail sentence, but in addition to whatever time he spends under very serious supervision, so does he have any responsibility? Does he have to compensate the owner of the chametz for this lost mitzvah? So that Minchas Chinuch discusses that. In this context, should we say that, all right, the whole point was simply not to have chametz, and therefore that was accomplished? Or do we say, no, there's a zchus here. There's a mitzvah to be able to destroy your own chametz, and this guy stole it from you. So he has to pay asar zehuvim. So the whole origin of this concept is here in this case of Kisei Hadam. If the shochet shechts the animal and he's ready to do his obligation of Kisei Hadam, and this guy broke out of jail, finished with his chametz torching and his baby circumcising, and he's like, oh, look, there's blood on the ground, I'm going to quickly cover it up. This guy really needs some help, but whatever, this is what he goes around doing. So he's got to pay. He's got to pay asar zehuvim to the shochet because he stole his mitzvah. And conversely, what about the other direction? Right, so what if the shochet doesn't want to do it? So he wants to ask somebody else to do it. Or he wants to let somebody else do it. Is he allowed to? Or is that considered to be a neglect? A dereliction of duty, even though it's going to get done, it's not right for someone else to do it. So here, this was a major discussion among the poskim. And you find basically three views. It does seem to be it's primarily his responsibility and it's wrong to put it on somebody else. How wrong is it? And is there any latitude here is a discussion. And the Shach is a big machmir on this. The Shach actually writes that it's not proper to let somebody else do it. And he says that's true about Bris Milah too. So if we carry this comparison further, he says, if the father is capable of doing the bris, so then he's not supposed to let somebody else do it. And it's a big question how we relate to that today, because nowadays it's very much the norm that a professional moel is brought in to do the milah, not the father himself, and for many reasons that's recommended. But the Shach was concerned about this. The Shach thought this was a problem because it's the mitzvah of the father, and therefore he's not even convinced that shlichus should work here. So that's a whole discussion how exactly to relate to that. It's very interesting because shlichus really should work for any mitzvah that is result-oriented. If it's just about protecting people from the blood, so then shlichus should be fine. So the idea that it's not just about the result, but that there is a strong preference, maybe more than even a preference, that the shochet himself should do this, that's interesting. So the halacha, you find the one here, the shach, saying really the shochet has to do it himself. The tvuas shor is quoted by many later svarim because it comes up in a lot of other discussions, but tvuas shor in Hilchos Shechita says that the shochet can be mechabed somebody else with this, can say, all right, I'll let somebody else do it as a kavod, because that's a zchus mitzvah. And others suggest it could be done b'tara shlichus, that as long as they're representing the original shochet, so then that's effective. So that's something we'll also have to pick up on tomorrow. So just to quickly review what we spoke about. So we tried to figure out the purpose of the mitzvah of Kisei Hadam. We see that it's couched in the Torah in the context of the Yisra Achila, but also sounds like it's a part of the process of Shechita. So we considered all these issues and how they're related to each other. To what extent is getting rid of the dam crucial to the mitzvah of Shechita? To what extent is the Yisra of eating the dam and the mitzvah of Shechita all correlated and related to each other? And Kisui Hadam, how exactly does that fit in, and is it connected to one mitzvah or the other? And we saw as a machlokas rishonim, when should the bracha be recited? Should it be recited only at the end, like the Bahag, because the mitzvah shechita is not over? Or is it something that has its own din and should be done beforehand? We talked about the difference between kachim and shechitas chulin, and how the zrikas adam and the kisui adam have a certain parallel to each other, as much as they are different. And we talked about some other practical questions here. We talked about the question of why should it be that the meat is mutter without the shechita? That would seem to suggest that shechita really is separate. But on the other hand, we're not allowed to shecht if the possibility of Kisei Adam is not in front of us, so that mitigates that assumption. And we compare that to tzitzis, where if you don't have tzitzis on Shabbos, so the Mordechai says, impossible to put the tzitzis on, so there's no issue to wear the garment. So apparently this is more than that. So it's somewhere in between disqualifying the shechita if it's not there, where it doesn't go that far. But on the other hand, it's more significant than putting tzitzis on a four-cornered garment, because we would not let you shecht if it was impossible to do, and we wouldn't say that necessarily by tzitzis. And we talked a little bit about how that relates to the discussion of tefillas kelim. And then we got into the question of, to what extent is it your personal responsibility? We see that it's connected to the shochet, which is not so obvious. You could have thought that it's just equally for anybody, or that maybe it's for the owner of the animal, and we see that's not the case, that yes, anyone should do it if it's not done, but it's primarily on the shochet, and that it's not on the owner of the animal. And Shlomo Kluger says, even if he makes that the explicit deal when he hires the shochet, doesn't have the right to make such a deal. which is interesting. And we saw that in both directions, there is a big emphasis on the priority of the Shochet, and that we saw it's compared to a Bris Milah, where there's an emphasis on the priority of the father. So that's in both directions, that somebody who would steal this from the actual Mechuyev has a liability of Asar Zehuvim, and we talked about other usages of that, Tachsam Sofer's Tshuva, Anav, Anas, Devarim, and Minches Chinuch about Tashbisu. And also that the father is doing something wrong, or in this case, the Shochet is doing something wrong if he doesn't consider it his responsibility to do it, and the question of whether he's allowed to let anyone do it. And we saw basically three views about that, that either he's not allowed, or he is allowed if it's as a covet to the person, the Tvua Shor, or that maybe, yes, he's allowed to, but it has to be understood as a shlichus. It's not simply a functional issue to make sure there's no blood around, but it is a mitzvah that is associated specifically with the Shochet, and it's only with the explicit understanding of shlichus that it could be transferred to anyone else. So we'll follow up on some of these themes, God willing, tomorrow. Wish everyone a safe and healthy day, and I will see you, God willing, in 23 hours. All right, should be only good things. Cult of...
Thank you,
Kirby. Thank you.